Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world. And welcome to Dark Reading Radio. I'm Kurt Franklin, the producer and your host for today's show. We have a wonderful show lined up for you here today at Dark Reading. As everyone knows, just a couple of weeks ago, the entire Dark Reading editorial team was at Black Cat, and they were reporting from Black Cat, but with the space of a couple of weeks, we wanted to have the editors together to talk about what their most important takeaways, lessons, and news stories of the show were. Before we do that, though, we have an interview that Dark Reading senior editor Sarah Peters recorded just before the conference, and wanted to lead with that. Now, before we get into that interview, we do want to remind everyone who's here with us live today that there is a great online discussion that happens alongside the audio. So if you're here with us at darkreading.com, please feel free to introduce yourself and go ahead, type your comment or question into the box labeled your post, then be sure to click on that big red post button underneath the box. Well, we'll be back in just a couple of minutes, but right now it's time for Sarah Peters' interview with two researchers from Bishop Fox. This was recorded just before the recent Black Hat Conference. Sarah, take it away.
I'm Sarah Peters, Senior Editor at Dark Reading, and with me today is Security Associate Dan Pietro and Senior Security Associate Oscar Salazar from Bishop Fox. They are presenting a session called Hacking Smart Safes on the Brink of a Robbery at DEF CON 23. Gentlemen, thanks for being with us today on Dark Reading Radio.
Yeah, thank you very much for having us.
Now, I guess my first question for you would be, if you were in one of those big Hollywood heist movies, what would be the role that you would want to play? Because I would always want to be the getaway car driver, but you could be one of those demolitions people or, of course, the hacker guy. But what would be your preference?
I don't know. I guess being the hacker guy would have to be the role, right? That's sort of what we are. The getaway driver to me seems like it's got the worst of all worlds, where you have full liability, but you don't actually get to do any of the interesting bits. So I think we have to be the person, plugging the USB port in this case.
Yeah, I agree. I think the hacker role seems like to be the most interesting, but also the mastermind role is probably pretty fun too.
Because the reason I ask is because it seems to me that now the hacker guy really can do all of the roles, right? Like you can drive the car remotely and you don't need the demolitions guy because you have people like you who can hack into smart safes. So take me through, first of all, what you're going to be doing at DEF CON is cracking into this smart safe service. So why don't you explain to me, first of all, how that works, and then we'll talk about how you ruin it. Which one of you would like to take that first?
Yeah, sure, this is Dan. I can get it kicked off. So we're just talking specifically about the Brinks CompuSafe Galileo, which is a particular model within the CompuSafe line of safes that Brinks offers. And so it's kind of like a safe as a service. Brinks offers a number of these safes for retail outlets, places like grocery stores, gas stations, convenience stores, things like that, to hold cash temporarily until it gets picked up by Brinks in order to be brought over to the bank, right? So that's basically the Brinks business model, is to move cash from one place to another, like from a store to a bank. And so these safes are an extension of that. So it's something that would be there, like underneath the till, right, like underneath the cash register of a location, in an area where customers could hypothetically go into, right? You could just go into an unused aisle at the grocery store. and potentially interface with one of these safes that has all kinds of, you know, computerized components like a touch screen and, as we demonstrate, a USB port that can be used to automate an attack to open up the safe doors.
And another important thing to note about the safe is that the way that the service works is that you put money into the safe, and it's connected to the internet. The bank essentially receives information from the safe saying $1,000 have been deposited. And once that transaction happens, once you put the money into the safe, that money isn't considered the store's money any longer. And you actually get that money deposited into your bank account as a store. And because of that, even the store manager doesn't have access to the safe. So the store manager can't open the main safe door, which contains the canisters with all the money in them. Because of that, there's an additional trust placed on this safe.
Yeah, we say it's like a nuclear launch code, right? Where like two people have to simultaneously insert their keys into the thing, right, and then turn it at the same time in order to unlock it. So you need both the Brinks employee present and the store manager.
So it sounds like it's more
normal
secure.
Operation of the safe.
Right. So how do you then compromise it if it's effectively supposed to have better security than the status quo? How does the compromise that you're going to be displaying work?
So the compromise is actually a combination of a bunch of different issues. One of the ones that we like to really point out is that the fact that there's that exposed USB port on the side of the, on the safe. And that allows you to plug in a keyboard or a mouse or a storage drive and get access to essentially controlling the system. One of the other things that's interesting is that it's running Windows XP embedded as an administrator. And so if you do manage to break out of the kiosk mode that the application is presenting, then you get access as an administrator on this Windows device to be able to run and execute whatever code you want. So it's not some kind of system where the only thing that's running is its application. It's running a full-blown Windows environment behind it.
And it's running an XP, you said.
Yeah. It's running XP, although that doesn't necessarily impact the finding. So if it was running the latest version of Windows embedded systems, it would still be vulnerable to this style of attack. So the fact that it's running Windows XP is maybe not all that surprising based on, you know, how the rest of the security, but doesn't end up being terribly important to the actual attack.
Okay.
So essentially, go ahead, Dan.
So we developed a little device based off of a Teensy. It's called a little USB device that you can plug into the side of the safe that automates like mouse and keyboard strokes, basically. So it has like a blind script that it runs that says like press, you know, the mouse button here, move to these coordinates, wait 3 seconds, you know, type in this. That emulates a mouse and keyboard that will escape outside of the kiosk mode, right, escape out of the application that's running on the touchscreen of the safe, break out into the operating system to that Windows XP backend, and then hijack the underlying database that manages all the authorization and all the logs for the entire safe, at which point we're able to do any arbitrary actions like lying about how much money it has and, of course, opening the safe doors.
So, okay, first question is, in order to do this, then I would imagine you need to have physical access to the safe, right, in order to be able to plug a USB into it, yeah?
That's correct. I mean, also, you would need physical access to, you know, remove
the cash out.
That's
right.
That's kind of assumed in the,
totally
the process of the attack anyway, so they don't consider that a big restriction, if you will. But yeah, the attack that we're going to be demonstrating is through the USB port on the outside of that safe. Though it should be noted that once you've compromised the safe in this way, it is fully networked and hooked up to the internet. So it can be remotely controlled by an attacker over the internet after that initial compromise has been performed.
If you want to just open it remotely for fun to cause somebody some troubles later, you could certainly do that just to to be a mischief maker.
Yeah, that's correct. And so we currently, the team key that we developed is used specifically to plug it in and have the doors open as quickly as possible. But you could just as easily plug that team key in, escape out of the sandbox, and upload your malware to it, essentially, which create, you know, would mm-hmm. connect to the internet, allow you to remotely open it, do a bunch of different interactions with the safe. So that's not something that we did, but definitely if you're running as an administrator on a device, you have kind of free reign of the environment.
So what you're saying is then this could be part of a staged attack that you could gain that access and then use it to upload another payload of some kind into that.
Yeah, process. Exactly. In fact, there was a similar attack against ATM machines that happened a while ago, back in 2011, if I'm not mistaken, that was like a coordinated pickup amongst ATMs, right, where like many of them were compromised and all scheduled all at the very same moment for, you know, a distributed group of thieves to go and pick up cash, where the same sort of attack would be possible here. But rather than going into one safe and then, you know, just opening its doors immediately, you could hijack it remotely and then schedule a time for, you know, maybe hundreds or more of these dolls to be picked up at the same time.
And about how much money are one of these safes, could they potentially be holding at any one time? Do you have any concept of that?
The maximum possible that they can hold is $240,000. That's just based off of, you know, the maximum quantity of bills that they can hold multiplied by a $100 bill. But in practice, it's going to be a bit lower than that, obviously. So it's going to be whatever the store has in cash reserves. So for grocery stores, it's probably going to be quite a lot, right? There's quite a few people that pay in cash, and there's a lot of throughput through those. And that's going to hold whatever is, you know, in excess, whatever cash reserves they get for the entire week, probably, until at whatever interval they have a cash pickup from Brinks, for instance.
Yes, and we're not entirely sure. You can kind of ask Brinks to pick up the money. You know, sometimes they come daily if you have too much money. I think you may be able to set kind of the designated amount of money that you feel comfortable holding, or maybe Brinks sets that. So let's say that right. You have $100,000 in that safe, and maybe Brinks feels like it's time to come pick it up. I'm not sure if it's scheduled on a, sometimes it might be scheduled like on a weekly basis, and sometimes it may be scheduled more on a, once we hit this amount of money, we'll come pick it up, so that we're not, since they're depositing that money into your bank account, they're essentially floating that money.
So
yeah,
it's just
one of the So one of the more disturbing parts of the exploit is that because this is fully hooked up to the internet and networked, and we have complete control of the computer that controls it, and a thief is able to monitor over time how much the safe has in terms of quantity, right? So they're able to determine that, you know, like Thursday, 6 p.m. would be the optimal time to pick it up, because that's right before the Brinks employees pick up the money, and that's going to have the, you know, greatest amount of cash. And so you could monitor this over time to figure out exactly, you know, when would be the perfect time to pick it up.
Right, right. Okay, that makes sense. Now, another thing that you mentioned is that you load this exploit on a USB stick, and it basically works like a skeleton key on any one of these Brink safes, right? So does that mean then that it can circumvent any of the identity and access management controls? Like it just kind of works around whatever password or whatever, anything that they have. It doesn't matter what the users end up putting onto it.
Yeah, that's correct. So we do actually have the ability to read the username and passwords from the database, mm-hmm. but instead of doing that, since this is a completely blind macro, this macro has no feedback or interactions from the safe itself. It's a sense that's really just move the mouse here, click, move the mouse here, click, right click. If the screens aren't in the same position, or let's say you were to plug this device into your regular computer, you'd just see the mouse moving around, clicking and typing some random stuff, but it wouldn't have any impact on your device. So in order to kind of bypass that, we end up actually adding our own accounts to the database, to which we know the password, and then automate also the process of unlocking the safe through that two-factor authentication, essentially, to bypass all the controls without needing to know anybody's password or any other information. We just as easily could display the manager's password and create a Brinks password and then manually type in the password to open the safe. The whole process is automated in order to prevent us from having to interact with it at all. You just plug it in, wait to 50-something seconds, and then the door will click.
This strikes me as falling into these two categories of scary trends that we're seeing, right? It's a security tool, the safe, effectively, essentially, and it is itself insecure. And then it's also another one of these physical things that's getting more connected, more smart, like smart buildings and smart meters and all these other physical systems that are getting more intelligent, and we're finding out that maybe they're really not all that intelligent. Are those some of the things that attracted you to this particular project, or did you really just find it fun because you wanted to crack safes your whole life, or what drew you to this particular project?
So actually, this was a project that was part of a client engagement that we had. They were asking us to assess their point of sale system, and in doing so, the safe was part of that point of sale system. So we walk in on the first day, we, see that there's a safe there. We're like, oh, this is going to be pretty interesting. It's a smart safe. And we look on the side of it, and there's an exposed USB key. And so Dan and I just look at each other and go, like, there's no way that's a live USB board, is it? And we plug in a mouse, and we're able to move a mouse around. And we're like, there's no way that we're able to plug in a keyboard or another device. And we kind of get a USB hub and get a keyboard, a mouse, and a USB thumb drive and get access to storage and essentially work on breaking out of the kiosk. And it just seemed like it, every time we would get to the next step or we'd have to do something, I feel like Dan and I were just saying, like, this, well, there's no way that this is also messed up, and then we'd just find that being a problem as well. So a combination of several different issues will lead to essentially a very, very simple exploit.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of analogies to be made here about the security in the Internet of Things age. There's lots of devices that get a lot of attention, things like airplanes and cars, that are all kind of computerized devices that we put our bodies into. But there's this entire other class of network devices that are being hooked up to the Internet and computerized, things like safes, right, that maybe are getting less attention. That's something that has a great security impact and something we should pay more attention to going forward.
Well, gentlemen, it has been a pleasure to talk to you both. Is there anything else that you want our listeners to know about your session, about DEF CON, about yourselves, before we let you go? Or is that all a secret because we are talking about breaking safes and DEF CON, so obviously those are secretive things to be talking about?
Actually, it is worth emphasizing that we're hoping to get the information out about this vulnerability in order to raise awareness for it and hopefully get it fixed by the appropriate vendors. We mean this for educational and security research purposes, and that we don't hope somebody uses it for malicious purposes.
Obviously. Very good. All right. Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Dan Pietro and Oscar Salazar from Bishop Fox.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
That was Dark Reading Senior Editor Sarah Peters with two researchers from Bishop Fox talking about, a fascinating and somewhat scary set of vulnerabilities that exist in the Internet of Things, and specifically the Internet of Things that hold money. Well, to follow up on that and to follow up on the entire Black Hat Conference, we have editors from Dark Reading here. And to lead the conversation there, I'd like to introduce Dark Reading Editor-in-Chief, Tim Wilson. Tim, over to you.
Thanks, Kurt. I appreciate it. The whole dark reading team is still recovering from Black Hat. There was so much that happened there, so many new vulnerabilities discussed, lots of expertise that was shared, and we wanted to spend the last 10 minutes or so of our broadcast today talking a little bit about what we saw there. And I think what we just heard from Bishop Fox was a great example of some of the what we like to call cool hacks that you see at a show like that. Sarah Peters ran our news desk at the conference and is probably in a better position than I am to talk about what some of the really awesome stuff that we saw there was. Sarah, as you look at things like, bank hacks, and we heard a little bit about cars and things like that, what are some of the things that happened at the show that maybe surprised you or that you thought were especially interesting?
Well, I would say one of the things that was kind of fascinating this year was how much Android there was. There were I think about like 6 or 7 maybe at least sessions that were about Android, and certainly the one that made a lot of headlines leading up to the show were all of those stage fright attacks that Josh Drake found. And since then, it's been really fascinating because there have been, I think, 3 more. We just found another one today, the news is breaking, of other vulnerabilities in these media engines in Android. So that's been a whole new class of attacks that we weren't really even expecting. And it's one of those things that is especially difficult to fix because it's not just something that Google can quickly patch. It's one of those things that's got to be fixed by every single manufacturer of every single Android device. So that's one of those gigantic, messy things to clean up. Related to something like the safe cracking were some physical attacks. Jason Larson was somebody that I spoke to at the news desk, and he did a session on bread and butter attacks on physical systems. I didn't get to see his session because I was at the news desk where I was kind of shackled for hours. It was a lot of fun, but I didn't get to go out very much. But what he told me he did was take a little, basically like a mini gas pipeline and cause it to collapse in on itself by doing, he managed to zero in on a couple of common weak points in all of these different physical systems, all, huge variety of physical systems, which usually you would have to know in very, very great detail. Usually you would have to know a lot about the physics, and you would have to know a lot about the blueprints of every single system. But he was able to kind of zero in on common weak points to exploit and showed that off during his session. So I thought that was pretty cool. Then there were the guys who did the, related to that, did a whole session just on pen testing a city. So that was all related to smart cities hacking, which again relates to that physical security stuff. So there was definitely some of that. Those are the things that I found to be kind of, that I guess appealed to me more, but there was just so much going on. It's such a big event that it's hard to keep track of all of it.
You know, what's interesting to me is that when I go to a show like that, I think your mind gets drawn in 2 different directions. One is the direction that you just went, where we talk about the things that are really unusual, the hacks that kind of leap out at you because you hadn't ever thought of them before. We saw the Jeep Cherokee, hack, gas pipelines, bank safes and that sort of thing. And that's sort of the shiny object that you find yourself looking at a show like that.
Right.
But what's interesting is sometimes we get so caught up in things like that we forget about the mainstream sorts of breaches and vulnerabilities that enterprises run into every day. And it was interesting, at the show, we talked a little bit about some research that we've been doing at Dark Reading with regard to what enterprises are expecting in the coming year. We did one study on behalf of the Black Hat organization called the Black Hat Attendee Study, and which you can find on the Dark Reading site. It's been published. And in addition, we've also been working with Information Week on something called the Strategic Security Survey, which is which will be published over the next month or so in a series of three reports. And the key theme that we found in those surveys was that enterprises in general, going beyond the safes and the cars and everything else, are really concerned about not only the Internet of Things and kind of where that's going, but just on the everyday threats. In the study, we found that 73% of the folks that we surveyed feel that they have, that it's likely that they'll be facing a major breach, that they'll be responding to a major breach in the next 12 months. And of those folks, 13% said they have no doubt face a major breach in the next year. So the thrust of the surveys really shows that just the average company is very concerned about where they are. We had, of that group, 73% said that they didn't think they had enough staff to manage the current threat. 66% said they didn't think they had enough budget, and 64% said that they didn't feel that they personally had enough training. So it's, as we go into this coming year, it's sort of a sobering way of looking at things. Not only do we have all of these Internet of Things attacks, that kind of jump out at us, but just the average enterprise is really wrestling with some big threats.
Yeah, and when you have such a skills shortage already, you certainly have to attract a lot of people. And when the problem is as scary as it is, when you say that there's that many, the fear of getting breached is that big, it seems like such a foregone conclusion that it's going to happen and it's going to be bad. I can imagine that it's not going to attract everybody. It's not one of those jobs that is going to just be booming with lots of people, because it's not an easy gig.
Yeah, and the thing is that you run into not only the technical threat, but there's the legal threat. I mean, we have Marilyn Cahotas, our community editor, is on with us today. She covered the keynote speech, dealt with an issue that we haven't even talked about yet, which is the whole legal threat. And Marilyn, do you want to talk a little bit about Jennifer Granick and the talk that she did there?
Yeah, Jennifer Granick, for those of you who know her, and most of you do, she's a world-famous defender of hackers and privacy and civil libertarian. She really electrified the crowd, and she was talking to a friendly audience, but she really took no prisoners. She really exhorted the audience about the dangers to our democracy and that government and industry were both culpable in that. I'm not really good at numbers. I didn't count people in the seats, but a couple of numbers that I heard quoted were about 6,000 people in the audience, and she really really brought them to their knee, their hands, their feet a couple of times. The other thing that was worth noting about her was that she also talked about diversity, and right from the outset, she was only the second woman to keynote the conference in 20 years, and I would guess that maybe that's in all of its history. Tim, you can correct me if I'm wrong there, but she made a strong case about the need to to open the field to everyone, not just a male dominated industry. But probably some of her biggest applause lines were talking about the need for an open internet and how much of a threat to the democracy some of the surveillance and the laws, and she you know, told people to, you know, they have to get up and do something about it, and the crowd, you know, resounded, you know, in huge applause. The other thing that she did was, you know, she had some talking points for the audience to do something, not just, you know, not just to rail against what's happening, but she had some points that she made about what the industry has to do is think more globally and she called for end-to-end encryption and government keeping its hands off private tech development and to, you know, start really becoming politically active, at which point, you know, people got on their feet and, you know, and cheered. But it was a very exciting moment at the conference, and it was a great way to start it off.
Well, it's, you know, we could obviously go on and on there. I mean, there was so much there at the conference. I hope that the folks who are listening will take the time to take a look at the coverage that we did during the show. If you haven't seen it yet, on the homepage of Dark Reading, there's a tab called Black Hat, and if you click on it, you'll see all the stories that we did. And as well as a lot of the speaker discussions and commentary that Marilyn brought in, you'll see information about you know, the speaking engagements, as well as the Black Hat conference that's coming up. The next one is in Europe in November. So you know, please, if you get a chance, take a look at all of our coverage, and we'll be here to discuss everything that we discovered at Black Hat online here as we begin the online chat. Please, if you'd like to find out more about any of the things that we've talked about today, please jump onto the chat, and we're happy to talk it over with you. Kurt, do you have anything you want to add?
Tim, thanks. Just want to remind all of our listeners that if they are listening to this in an on-demand version, well, we're glad to have you with us, but we would love it if you were here live. Dark Reading Radio comes to you live every month here on the Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And when you're here with us live, you have the advantage of not only listening to the great content that happens in the radio program, but taking part in that online discussion. We would love to have your voice in that discussion, so plan to join us when you do. If you can, along with all the people who are here with us now, type comments and questions into that box labeled your post, then be sure to click on that big red post button below the box. Well, Dark Reading Radio will be back again next month with more exciting news and analysis from the world of information security. Until then, for Tim Wilson, Marilyn Cahotas, and Sarah Peters, I'm Kurt Franklin. Thanks so much for being here with us. We'll see you in the Dark Reading community.